From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 8th day of November 2013. It's USDA Report Day. We'll take those numbers up and the reaction in Chicago with Mike Zuzlo. He's at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Atchison, Kansas. And then a bit later in the program, Ben Pruce from the Andersons Everly, Iowa facility will be here to talk about cash grain and basis in his area. And as we close out our program, we'll discuss the weather forecast with Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey, the Prairie Research Institute, and it all happens on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
Let's check the numbers as they finished up in Chicago on this USDA report day, a Friday afternoon, December contract. For the corn futures at 426 and three quarters, we're up 6 1/4. The March at 438 and a half, up 7. And May at $4.47, up 7 cents on the settlement price. July at 453 and three quarters, 7 higher. And December of next year, 468 and a half, up 7 and a quarter. The soft red winter wheat finished the December at $6.49 and three quarters, down 3 1/4 cents. July futures at 668 and a half, or down a quarter. The hard red at 732 and three quarters, unchanged on the day. Actually, the hard red at $7.06 and a half, that's down 1/4 cent. It was the hard red spring that was unchanged. November bean futures, $13.06 settlement price, up 27 1/4. January, $12.96, up 29 1/2. And the March beans at $12.76 and three quarters, up 28 and three quarters. May futures $12.58, that finished up 23 and three quarters. In July, soybeans finished the day at $12.53 and a quarter, up 23 cents. November contract of next year, $11.61, up 13 and a half. Bean meal at $4.22.30, up 18.50. Bean oil at $40.24, finished 50 cents lower on the afternoon. Live cattle futures, December contract for the day, $132.40, up 72 and a half. February at $133.95, up 40. November feeders at $164.42 and a half, down 20 cents. And January at $164.42 and a half, down 70 cents today. December lean hogs at $88.12 for 100 pounds, finished 57 and a half cents higher. February at $92.07, up 67 and a half. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. December crude oil at $94.43 a barrel, up 23 cents. RBOB gasoline, or the wholesale price, $2.55 2/10 cents. That's up 4 9/10 cents. Ethanol futures at $1.67 4/10, up 3 9/10. And the difference between the two, or the spread at 87 8/10 cents, is now just about a penny wider than it was yesterday. Natural gas at $3.56 3/10, up 4 4/10. And diesel fuel at $2.87 1/10. That's up 3 1/10 cents. Gold futures at $1,284.60, finished down $23.90 on a settlement price. And the U.S. dollar at 81.29. That's up 0.45 on the afternoon. Let's take a look at the weather forecast as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon. Partly sunny skies, a high of 51 degrees on a south wind at 11 to 13. That'll gust all the way to 18. And then this evening, partly cloudy and a low of 40 degrees. South winds at 13 to 18 miles an hour this evening. Saturday, mostly sunny skies with a high of 60 degrees. Should be beautiful outside. Southwest winds at 13 to 18, gusting to 28. Mostly clear on Saturday night and 36 degrees. Sunday, sunny skies and 50, and partly cloudy on Sunday evening, a low of 34. On Veterans Day, Monday, partly sunny and 53. Monday evening, a chance of snow. That's right, rain and snow, cloudy, a low of 32 on Monday night. Partly sunny on Tuesday with a high of 37 degrees. Tuesday night, partly cloudy and 23. Wednesday, 37 and Sunday, or sunny, and Wednesday evening, mostly clear and 25. Sunny skies on Thursday with a high of 42 degrees. We'll take a more complete look at the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit of Illinois, dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers.
You're listening, of course, to Illinois Public Media. This is the closing market report for Friday afternoon. It's USDA Report Day. On the phone line with us, as usual, is Mike Zuzlow. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting in Atchison, Kansas. Good afternoon to you, Mike. Thanks.
Good afternoon, Todd. How are you today?
No, busy, but really doing very well. Tell me about the numbers that you saw come out from the United States Department of Agriculture. At 11 o'clock this morning, they made some big changes, but it didn't matter a lot, at least for corn.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think the big thing that I saw, Todd, was, and this is something that we'll probably need to skim over because it's a really detailed issue, but you have had a trade that has been trading the United States supply pretty much all year long in corn, in beans, and in wheat. And today's report, for corn at least, was friendly, because we didn't feed the corn bear by the ending stocks number. And the record short funds probably don't feel as comfortable based upon the U.S. corn ending stocks as they did before 11 o'clock Central. But the world numbers were bigger, and the world wheat numbers were bigger. And so the big question heading into next week is, do the futures traders, do the algorithmic fund traders switch and say, now we're going to go over to trading global numbers and not trade the U.S. numbers? And that was kind of what we saw today, but the beans kind of saved them from having to make the decision because the U.S. bean number was friendly in that it met the average trade guess and didn't come in with a massive 190 or 200 million bushel carryover, and most importantly, the global soybean ending stock number actually went down, which really surprised the trade. So the trade and the funds seemed like they went back to buying beans, selling corn, with the meal back in the driver's seat as the leader to the upside. So that's kind of the quick wrap-up after the report numbers.
Yeah, so the corn ending stocks number is now 1.887 billion bushels, 170 million bushels for the soybeans. But as you said, it was really the corn numbers globally that changed a great deal and put a lot more pressure eventually, I suppose, on the corn market. Usually we turn our attention away from the United States at about this time of the year and start looking other places, but that's for soybeans and not corn. Do you think it really will make that much of a difference?
I don't, because I think the trade got short on the and the funds are record short and maybe record net short based upon what CFTC does when they update their numbers, hopefully today. I think they'll stick with the U.S. numbers. And I say that because I think that the United States is the major supplier to the world this year, exactly the opposite of last year. So I guess I feel like that the USDA confirmed to the trade that we went low enough in corn prices to attract additional demand. We're up around that 13 billion bushel total demand number that you and I have talked about most of this season. And I think that says to the trade, you've done your job of taking prices low enough to seek out demand. Now, there's one other thing on this global corn stocks to use and supply number. They came in for the 2012 crop, last year's global supplies, and increased the number of ending stocks by 10%, or 483 million bushels. That is a huge number to increase a prior year's ending stocks figure. And not all of that was just United States. It wasn't just the United States carry-in from last year being increased by 100 and some million bushels. So this is where it's almost counterintuitive to have these type of numbers being traded by the trade, in my opinion anyway, because given the exports year-to-date and given the domestic demands being so strong, does it really matter that our carry-in last year was that much bigger? Because we've probably already chewed through a good portion of that, and if we hadn't, then somebody's got some more stocks out there, so why would demand be so good? So that's one of the things that I think the futures market may have to continue to work through in the corn, but I think the cash market, as I said to clients and producers, I feel like the cash market maybe has at this point made a cash low now that harvest is over, at least until we get to the January report.
You okay with the changes in the yields? 160.4 for the corn, the average trade guess at 159.2. Last time around, which was 2 months ago now, at 155.3, so it went from 155.3 to 160.4, almost a 5-bushel run. Actually, a 5.1-bushel increase in the corn, and the soybean yield went from 41.2 to 43, but that was above the average trade guess.
It was, and they compensated that with a bigger demand base in the beans, and they compensated that with a bigger crush, and that's where the meal's taken over. But yeah, to answer your question, I think this is a very clean report, given we had no October report, and I think it was especially important that they came in and addressed the harvested acres at the same time as they addressed the yield so we could get a more accurate portrayal of the actual production. And I think also it was important to note that versus the September report, the ear weight actually went down just a smidge for this month's report, and that matches up and kind of validates that the Western Corn Belt did indeed struggle between prevent planted acres and also with some lighter yields that maybe the trade had not been factoring in, that they'd been concentrating more in the futures market about these record yields, which I think Indiana did put one in today. Ohio stayed unchanged, if I remember right. I think Illinois went up, but I'm not sure if that was a record or not.
Yeah, so the harvested acreage for corn went from 89.135 in the September estimate to 87.2 million acres, and for soybeans it went from 76.384 to 75.7 million acres. I guess all in all, we have to really take a look at it now and say, okay, what happens? Does the futures market just stay put pretty much like it has? Soybeans have bumped up a little bit. And can basis at this point come back into the marketplace and offer an opportunity for producers, or do you have other ideas for corn?
No, I think that's the answer. I think the cash basis and the continuation of what we've traded, Todd, the last year, year and a half, is probably what this report would suggest to me, that, okay, we did come in under 2 billion bushels. We did see a demand increase. My needs were met with the lower harvested acres, compensated for improved yields in the Eastern Corn Belt. Now, does the demand come in and start to shake out the cash market a little bit more and the global demand? The one thing that I think the trade is way off on, and this probably won't come as a surprise, is the wheat. The global wheat number is way too high based upon some of my contacts over in Europe. And the Australian number today was kept unchanged at 25.5 million tons. The attaché came out earlier this week out of Australia and lowered his estimate to 23.5 million tons. That didn't make today's report. And Paris Week closed at a new two-week high because Algeria came in and bought about 700,000 tons this week from France. So the wheat demand is still very, very strong, yet the wheat closed near its lows again and has completely erased most of its rally from October. So I think this comes back in and supports the corn, the cash market for wheat, the cash market for corn, and I think technically the beans look very, very healthy, probably the best-looking bean chart I've seen in about 3 months.
You said that this was a clean set of numbers to you. There's also an estimate for the average cash price. It's down 30 cents on corn on both ends, $4 to 10 to 4.90 now. So that one dropped pretty dramatically.
Yeah, and keep in mind, most of the cash prices in the Eastern Corn Belt have gone sub $4. So here again, I think it's a clean report in that the trades already predicted that and put that into the price.
What about for livestock producers? Anything here that they ought to look at and say, oh, I need to consider this as I move forward?
Yeah, I think there's a big thing for the livestock producers. The big thing that you asked me a minute ago that I haven't touched on when it came to the turn in the futures or the potential for the futures market to turn is the technicals. It's the momentum. It's the trends. That's what has changed in terms of our structure of our market now since the financial crisis. And when the funds see that momentum, see those trend changes, they're probably going to make a reaction to buying the grains and maybe selling off on the hogs and selling off on the cattle, because we have seen, generally speaking, a stronger cattle and hog market on cheaper feed grains, more of a traditional market, but different players this time. So when the technicals turn on the bottom side for the grains, I'd be looking for the hogs and cattle maybe have really big difficulties making any new highs. So bring back in the hedging mindset.
I suppose it might be important to mention that on the weekly trade, November soybeans were up 40 cents, and they posted an outside up week, and it was pretty good-sized outside up week, too.
Yeah, this is a real, real chart to behold because, like I said, we really haven't seen a chart like this in any of the commodities for about 3 months, and we've got a gap in the January bean chart just under the 1375 level. This is probably the best fundamental setup we could have and technical setup we could have to chase after that gap, and this is crucial. Now you're getting into the time period that if you do have a bean rally and it's substantial enough to fill that gap and you go 75 cents higher, guess what? You're pricing yourself out of the demand again, and you're probably attracting South American demand. So utilize this rally. Maybe re-own it early on, but as you get higher, start to utilize it to sell the 13 bushels you have left to sell. And I especially want to work on the 14 beans as we get closer to that $11.75, $12 level again.
Hey, thanks so much.
Thanks, Todd. Talk to you later, sir.
Mm-hmm. That is Mike Zuzulow. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting, and will talk to me later. On our Commodity Week program, Ellen Dearden of Ag Review out of Morton will join us. So will Jackie Vake. She's from Stuart Peterson Commodity Week. It's our weekly look at what happened in the world of agriculture. It'll be posted a little bit earlier than usual. You might check around, I don't know, 4:30 this afternoon. Commodity Week up at willag.org. That's W-I-L-L-A-G.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. That's W-I-L-L-A-G.org. By the way, remember, you'll find all of the numbers from the USDA reports today posted there in our USDA reports section. That's over on the right-hand side of the page. You'll also find a link there for our Ag Outlook panels. Hit that, and you'll find the Ag Masters program from the U of I. That's December 2nd and 3rd. You'll find the Farm Doc or Illinois Farm Economics Schedule. That begins the week of December 16th, and the Corn and Soybean Classic Series as well. That begins in January. There are ways to register for them all and good ways to find out where we'll be with our Will Ag panels. That's at willag.org. USDA reports are on the right-hand side, and the Ag Outlook Schedule is there as well. Make sure you visit it today. Now, up next, we've all gotten used to the idea that 10% of the gasoline we put into our cars is ethanol made from corn. It could be more in flex fuel vehicles, up to 85% and up to 15% in most new vehicles. But for practical purposes, it's 10%. I'll have more on what that means for the nation's energy policies.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Here's one definition of the blend wall. It comes from University of Illinois ag economist Scott Irwin.
The blend wall, simply put, is an issue where until very recently, U.S. regulations only allowed gasoline blends to contain up to 10% ethanol by volume. And as our mandates have increased over time, they have begun to collide with that blend wall. Just as a simple example, if we're consuming 130 billion gallons of gasoline transportation fuel in the U.S., and you can only put 10% of that in the form of ethanol, then the blend wall is a physical 13 billion gallons.
The regulatory functions of how much ethanol, made from any source, but let's go with corn, can be blended into a gallon of gasoline mostly maxes out at about 13 billion gallons. However, United States law mandates more renewable fuels than that to be used, eventually. It ramps up to 15 billion gallons of renewable fuels by 2015. The difference, unless Congress changes the law, will need to be made up in some other places. It's really unclear how that can happen. Separately, there is an issue related to what Congress labels as advanced biofuels. That's any renewable energy source made from anything other than corn. The most likely candidate here is soy diesel. It has the opposite problem of corn-based ethanol, which is maxed out. Just trying to reach the advanced biofuels mandate could consume more soybean diesel than the U.S. has capacity to produce. Here's ag economist Daryl Good.
I think for the most part, biodiesel production has been driven by the RFS mandate. Last year, we had a minimum requirement of 1 billion gallons of biodiesel. This year at 1.28 billion gallons. So that has been the primary driver to meet that mandate. With somewhere between 50 and 60% of the feedstock for biodiesel coming from soybean oil. As we move forward, certainly the level of the mandate will continue to be an important component of biodiesel production. whether that increases or not. Second will be the total advanced biofuel mandate and the resulting undifferentiated component of that, which biodiesel could fill along with primarily Brazilian sugarcane. And so it will be kind of the, on a blending, physical blending basis, it will be kind of the relative economics of biodiesel versus imported sugarcane that would determine which product would meet that undifferentiated component. And then thirdly, if depending on the total biofuels mandate and the size of the blend wall, it may not be possible for renewable fuels, primarily corn-based ethanol, to meet the total renewable mandate, so that some of the advanced biofuels would have to be used to fill that gap. And so there's another opportunity for biodiesel. So a number of factors will influence the rate of growth there, but I think the primary driver will be the total advanced mandate that EPA announces.
Confused? Here's the short version. It will take every gallon of U.S. soybean oil to meet the advanced fuels mandate. There are other items there too, but let's just stick with these two facts. The corn-based ethanol blend wall prevents oil companies from complying with the actual mandate. The advanced biofuels mandate is so big that it could consume all the soybean oil pressed in the United States. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. Listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is a Friday afternoon. Ben Pruse from the Andersons, Everly, Iowa, is on the phone line. Good afternoon to you, Ben.
Hello, Todd. How are you today?
I'm really, really good. What'd you make of this morning's USDA report and reaction, and how'd things turn out there in your part of the world?
Well, actually, the reaction was overall, you know, on the corn side, you know, it didn't do a whole lot. Corn finished up 6 here today. Guys are mostly pleased. The long December puts that we put in place, guys are pleased that they didn't gain money on them. So,
things really, when you look at the end of this one, the end of the year numbers, those stocks, they really haven't changed very much, have they?
No. It's a little lower on the end of expectation. You know, the 1.8 billion on the carryout of the corn, and you know, I mean, that obviously feels healthy. And here today, that's somewhat of a tidbit of bullish. But, you know, I keep telling my producers here in Northwest Iowa that, hey, we need to keep an eye on it here. We could see this market just kind of just fade away. It just kind of has that feel to it, because at the end of the day, we have enough grain, i.e. corn, on hand. So, once again, we need to be cognizant.
So this is the part where it feels healthy. Everybody shut the door. There may be some basis appreciation, you think, in the near term?
Yeah. You know, at the end of the day, this report, yes, while slightly bullish, the farmer still seems to be frozen. Guys are paralyzed what to do. And, you know, it's everybody in the Corn Belt, well, it's $5 cash. Hey, if I can get $5 cash, I'll go home and call her a day. But, you know, we're a ways away from that. We're kind of going to run out of here today. It feels like we're going to run out of reasons to go back towards $5. And so we need to be ultra vigilant in what's in our marketing plan here the next 90 days.
Hey, Ben, thanks so much.
Yep, thanks, Todd.
Ben Pruse is with the Andersons Everly, Iowa facility, joins us here on the Closing Market Report for this Friday afternoon. When we come back, we'll take you through the weekly changes and the weather forecast.
It's National Bittersweet Chocolate with Almonds Day. The cultivation of seeds that produce chocolate date back at least 3 millennia to Central America and Mexico. The earliest documented use was around 1100 BC, with the Maya and Aztecs making bitter chocolate beverages. On this day in agricultural history in 1807, Tom Brassey was born. An early English railway contractor, he built railway lines worldwide. He laid tracks in England, France, the Netherlands, Italy, Prussia, Spain, Canada, India, Australia, and South America. In all, he built more than 6,500 miles of track. In 1872, the Mary Celeste sailed for Genoa from New York with a cargo of 1,700 barrels of alcoholic spirits. The ship was found abandoned near the Azores, the captain, his wife and daughter, and seven crewmen missing, and no sign of violence. The captain, his family, and the crew were never seen again. In 1923, Michael Joseph Owens died. He is credited with the invention of the automatic glass bottle-making machine. And in 1928, Norton David Zinder was born. An American biologist and molecular geneticist, he studied a species of salmonella and discovered how genetic material is transferred from one bacterial cell to another by the means of a virus. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM. Their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers ADM customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
You're listening, of course, to Illinois Public Media. It is a production of willag.org. In the closing market report, here the way the numbers settled up in Chicago for the week on the changes. Nearby December corn, Friday to Friday, finished at 426 and three quarters. It was down a half cent on the week. The December of next year for the weekly change was up a penny and three quarters at 468 and a half. November beans this week settled 40 cents higher on an outside up week at $13.06. November of next year at $11.61. We're up 15 and a quarter. December bean meal at $4.22 and 30. That's up 27.40. And soybean oil at $40.24. finished $1.35 lower. Soft red winter wheat this week in the December contract at $6.49 and 3 quarters, finished 18 cents lower Friday to Friday on their settlement prices. In July of next year at $6.68 and a half, down 16 and a quarter. December live cattle at $132.40, finished 32 and a half cents higher on the weekly trade. November feeder cattle at $164.42 and a half. We're up 92 and a half cents, and December lean hogs at $88.12 and a half, finished 22 and a half cents lower. You, of course, are listening to the closing market report from Illinois Public Media.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
Now here's Jim Angel with this week's look at the weather forecast.
This is Jim Angel, state climatologist located at the Illinois State Water Survey at the Prairie Research Institute on the campus of the University of Illinois. So far, November has been wet. The statewide precipitation was 1.35 inches. That's 70% above normal. Temperatures across the state were right at normal for this time of year. Because of the rains in October and early November, most of the state has recovered from this summer's flash drought. The only areas with lingering concerns are around the Quad Cities area and in east central Illinois, where soil moisture and stream flows are still down. Our 19-station network of soil temperatures across the state indicates that bare soil temperatures at 4 inches have dropped significantly in recent weeks and range from the mid to upper 30s in the northern half of the state and in the low 40s in the southern half. According to the National Weather Service forecast, this weekend and next week will be dominated by high pressure. That means we'll see little precipitation and colder than normal temperatures. On Saturday, highs will range from the mid-50s in the north to the mid-60s in the south. Sunday and Monday will be colder with highs in the mid-40s in the north and the mid-50s in the south. It'll be colder still on Tuesday and Wednesday with highs in the 30s in the north and in the mid-40s in the south. On Tuesday, there is a small chance of precipitation. This is Jim Angel, state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey.
Our thanks go to Jim Angel for his update of the weather forecast here at willag.org. Find us online at willag.org. We'll post our Commodity Week program soon. You can check it out anytime you'd like over the weekend. Have a good one. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.